Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for David Rafael Ben Fanya, Hadassa Bat Yitzchak, Sharon Katz, Shlomo Ben Avraham, and Dorit Bat Sarah, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel, Pesach Zev Ben Chava, Harab Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We have one subject we want to discuss on this week's program. We've spoken in the past about the incredible Jewish influence and impact on world history and world events, because the world actually revolves around this tiny nation, Israel. And there's a reason for that. Hashem wants to prove to the world, first of all, that he's the God of Israel, the God of that gave the Jewish people the Torah, so that this could be the example that could be set for all the nations of the world. And also by picking this tiny nation and showing the incredible impact that this tiny nation has on the events of the entire world, a world of 7.5 billion people. By proving this, anyone with the slightest amount of insight could see that the Jewish people are not like other people and that there is something special that God wants to prove through the Jewish people, through his people. We're going to talk about it, though, from a historical perspective that in certain ways, in a manner that we haven't discussed before in the past. Let's start off by talking about polytheism and monotheism, the belief in many gods, the belief in one God. At one time, the entire world believed in many gods. There was no belief in one God. Didn't exist. The concept was just foreign to human thinking and to the human outlook. And of course, eventually there were people who did understand, even before Avraham Avinu, Abraham, our father, was the first Jew. But even before Avraham Avinu, there were people who did come. There were a few individuals, brilliant individuals, who did come to the understanding that there is only one God. But they were an isolated few, like voices crying out in the wilderness. Abraham Avinu is the first one who really comes forward and tries to promote the concept that there's only one God. Do you know how much ridicule the Jewish people were placed under for a couple of thousand years at least for believing in only one God? How foolish people thought this was. How ridiculous. How could you believe in just one God? All of the complexities of the world and all the different things you see and all the different contradictions in the world. How could there just be one God? Obviously, there's a good God and a bad God, the dualists said, the dualists who believe in two gods. Obviously, there are many gods, the other people said. And look at nature and look at the way nature behaves and the laws of nature. Obviously, there are many gods. The Jews came under such incredible ridicule for believing in only one God, even though it is logical to conclude that there can only be one God, because there has to be just one supreme being over everyone. There has to be. If there were two gods, then he wouldn't be a supreme being, because one God would limit the power of the second God. And then you couldn't have a creator of everything who has no beginning and has no end and is all-powerful, which you have to have, because there's always an elevation in the world. There's always something higher and something higher and something higher. There has to be, in order to get to the very start of creation, there has to be a being that is all-powerful, and the only way there could be a being that is all-powerful is if there is only one God. But this was too much for the world to understand thousands of years ago, and so the Jews came under tremendous ridicule. Tremendous ridicule, and many Jews left Judaism because of that and decided to believe in multiple gods. And even today we see the desire of people to try to personify God. And that's part of the reason for Christianity. Christianity is a personification of God. The concept that God became a human being and died on a cross, that's a concept, and we don't want to say anything offensive to our Christian viewers, but that's a concept that's completely foreign to the Jewish view, that God is indivisible, unchangeable, that which is perfect can never be changed and can never be manifested in anything material, because material and physical things are automatically limited. And you can't have any limitations on God. God is completely unlimited in every respect and can never be transformed into something different or something else because he is absolutely perfect and unchangeable. But in any event, there is this feeling you can't believe in just one God. And then the fact that the Jews believed in an invisible God created tremendous ridicule. The Jews were laughed at and ridiculed by the whole world for believing in an invisible God. How can you believe in a God that you don't even see, that you can't even touch or see or feel? If you're going to believe in God already, you have to believe in a God that you see has tremendous power, like the sun or the stars or nature itself. You have people who believe in nature itself as God. And there are many, and there are indeed people to this day who look upon nature as a system of gods. And so Judaism, by challenging all of that and by saying, no, there are laws of nature, but God created nature. There are laws of the world, but God created the world. There are many vast and complex things in the world, but God is above all of that, and he created all of that. And there has to be one being above all of that where it all started. It has to have started somewhere. It has to have started from someone. You see, the atheist and the agnostic, they believe in God because they believe nature is controlling the world, except they believe in a God who has no mind and no plan and who is blind, who is completely blind, and just everything happens by chance and by law or by laws of nature. So they believe in a God. The God that the atheists and agnostics believe in is called nature. They believe through natural things, things just happen, but for no reason and with no plan and with no logic. The world has no logic, even though that contradicts everything we see in the world. Every aspect of the human existence proves the logic of a loving God. And a creator that is absolutely infinite. We have eyes that are the perfect cameras. We have ears that are absolutely magnificent in terms of their ability to take in and hear far beyond anything human beings could ever dream of creating. We have a trillion cells and more in our body. And all of it is indeed coordinated properly. We have a nose that is put above our mouth so that if we wanted to eat something that's rotten or spoiled, we'd be able to smell it. A loving God did that so that we could smell if the food is rotten or spoiled and we wouldn't put it in our mouths and wouldn't hurt ourselves. And the way our digestive system works, who ever heard of bone and teeth being grown out of flesh? That's what happens in our gums. That's what teeth suddenly grow out of our flesh. Out of one little sperm cell, out of one little tiny microscopic object, a baby is created. Human life is created. The most complex form of anything that anyone can imagine is created. To believe that all of this is all by chance and all just happened by chance is absurd. It's beyond absurd. There is zero chance that that is possible. You who don't believe in God, you actually do believe in a God called nature and just things. That's your God. You don't call him God, but you believe in nature. You believe that things just happen and that's it. And there's no reason and there's no reason and there's no logic and there's nothing behind it and no one behind it. We the Jewish people believe there has to be a divine being and there has to be a divine purpose behind all of this. As Professor Albert Einstein concluded, and as other great scientists, by the way, throughout history, have eventually concluded. The fact is, there is no way that this vast universe could possibly exist or function without a divine plan. And so, the Jews believed in an invisible God because we're physical beings. Anything that's physical is limited. God cannot be visible. It's impossible for him to be visible because God is unlimited in his power. He is unlimited. And there is no way for us to even describe him or his power. There's no way for us to understand it because it's infinite and we're finite. Just another example of Jewish influence on the world. The Jewish Shabbat. The Jewish Sabbath. Shabbat. The Jews introduced into the world a new concept that one day of the week you shouldn't work. You're not allowed to work for the Jewish people. By the way, the Gentiles are not required to observe the Sabbath under Jewish law. They are not required to do that. In any event, this Jewish concept of the Sabbath, of Shabbat, was a radical departure from what had existed in ancient times. In ancient times, people worked 7 days a week. The idea of taking a whole day off of work or of giving workers a whole day off was a completely foreign concept, a completely alien concept. And the ancient Egyptians, Romans, Greeks, Babylonians, Mesopotamians, all ridiculed the Jews for their Sabbath, for offering a day off, for saying that workers should have a day off. And of course, the Jewish Sabbath is a lot deeper than just giving a day off to the workers. But the point is, the Jews were ridiculed and called lazy because they only wanted to work 6 days a week. And in fact, the ancient Romans even used to say that the Jews had a lazy God, because it says in the Torah that God rested on the seventh day. So they said even their God is lazy. The people are lazy and even their God is lazy. And yet today, it is universally accepted throughout the world that you're supposed to give at least one day off to people who are working. It's a universally accepted concept. But far more than that is the concept of a seven-day week. The Jews introduced that to the world, that there are 7 days in the week. The 6 days of creation, which represents six different periods in history, actually. It's all symbolic. And the seventh day, the Sabbath, for rest. The concept of a seven-day week is a Jewish concept that did not exist before the Jews brought this to the world. Now, I could understand the concept of a month, how the world creates months. Months are logical because it involves the moon revolving around the earth, and it's a monthly process, and that's how the lunar calendar works. I could even understand the year, because the year involves the earth revolving around the sun, and that's something that takes place on an annual basis. So we understand the solar calendar, we understand the lunar calendar, we understand the creation of months, of 30-day months, or roughly 30 days each month. And we understand 365-day years. But 7 day weeks? There's no reason in nature, or no apparent reason in nature, to have a 7 day week. This is something Jews brought to the world. And initially it was rejected. But today, the whole world, without exception, accepts the idea that there are 7 days in a week. This is universally accepted now by the entire world. Something which at the time was considered to be ridiculous. Why isn't there a 10-day week? Why isn't there an 8-day week? Why isn't there a 5-day week? The Jewish concept of a 7-day week, as we see in the Torah, was eventually accepted by the entire world. And we see, of course, that the laws that were given by the Torah to the Gentiles as well, many of them are now universally or almost universally accepted, at least in the Western world. For example, in ancient times, we didn't have refrigeration and you didn't have electricity. So if somebody wanted to feed their family, and let's say they had a cow, or a horse. Now, we talk about non-kosher meat. The cow is kosher, of course. The horse is not kosher. But in ancient times, and the Gentiles are allowed to eat horses, they're allowed to eat non-kosher meat. Let's say someone wanted to feed their family. So they would take a cow, and they would cut the leg off of the cow, because you can't feed your family the whole cow. Your family's not going to eat the whole cow. And you can't preserve the meat of the cow because there's no refrigeration or electricity. So what do? Your family can only eat a portion of the cow. You can't eat a whole cow. And the meat is going to get spoiled because we don't have the ability to freeze the meat. So in ancient times, what did they do? The pretty universal practice was they would cut off, let's say, the leg of a cow or the leg of a horse. And then they would bind up the wounds where the leg was cut off. The animal was still alive. They would bind up the wounds, and the animal would continue to live. And then they'd eat the leg. That night they would eat the leg. And then the next night they cut off the next leg. And then the next leg. And then they cut off portions of the animal and keep binding it up, and the animal would become more and more truncated and would suffer more and more, but would remain alive, and so the meat wouldn't spoil. That was the practice in ancient times. And again, fairly universal. The Jews introduced the concept that you are not allowed to rip the portions of an animal. You're not allowed to eat an animal while it's alive, and you're not allowed to rip portions of its body off while it's alive to consume the animal. You're not allowed to do that. That it's inhumane to an animal. Tsa'ar ba'alei chayim, the sorrow that an animal, that animals feel, is a Jewish concept. And so people were told, you're not allowed to do this anymore. You have to slaughter the entire animal. You've got to kill the animal first. If you want to eat the animal, you're permitted to eat the animal. But you've got to kill the animal first. You can't allow it to suffer by tearing off its leg or tearing off just a portion of the animal and letting, and then binding it up and then letting the animal suffer the next few days while you tear off another piece and feed your family piece by piece. You can't do that. It's not allowed. You've got to kill the animal entirely so that it won't suffer. And you've got to kill the animal humanely if you want to eat the animal. This was another radically new concept for the world. And the world completely opposed it and resisted this concept. For years, resisted this concept. They thought it was absurd. And they even said at the time, what do you do? What are we wasting a whole cow? We can't eat a whole cow. We can't feed our family a whole cow. What are we going to do? And so the Jewish answer was, sell the cow. Slaughter the cow. You feed your family whatever portion of the cow you can eat, and then the rest of the meat you sell. Or you invite over your friends and neighbors and everyone in the community to feast on the cow. You have a big party. You can sell the meat, or you can invite a lot of guests over to also participate, but you're not allowed to make that animal suffer. It's not permitted. Today, it is now almost universally accepted that you're supposed to slaughter the animal first. That you don't just rip a leg off of an animal or rip the wings off of a bird before you eat it. Or you're not allowed, I mean, when I say you're not allowed, it's considered to be barbaric to do that today. Whereas in ancient times, that was the common practice. But the Jewish law, which is one of the seven commandments, Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, the seven commandments that were given to Bnei Noach are the Gentiles. The seven commandments that were given to the sons of, Bnei Noach means the sons of Noah. The seven commandments that were given are commandments that the Gentiles under Torah law are required to follow, that God requires the Gentiles to follow. And one of them is that you're not allowed to eat a portion of an animal while it's still alive. You're not allowed to eat an animal or rip a piece of the animal off while it's still alive. That you've got to slaughter the animal first if you wish to eat it. And that law, which at one time was completely and universally rejected, is now fairly accepted around the world. Of course, one law that we've spoken about in the past, which was considered to be the ultimate example of the way the human community was organized in the world, is the concept that the king was like a god. In fact, the king was a god to be worshipped in ancient empires and in ancient times in almost every country and almost every tribe. The king and the head of the tribe, they were gods, and you worshipped the head of the tribe and you worshipped the kings. The king made the law, and the king was the law. The king could make the law anything he wants. The king was an absolute ruler. That was the rule that was put into place in virtually every country for thousands of years. The Jews introduced a new concept. The Jews introduced the concept that God is the true king of the world. You can have a human king as well. In order to keep things organized and orderly in this world, you can have a human ruler, a human king, or a president, or a prime minister, or whatever else you want to call it. You can have that. But the real ruler of the world is God. The human king, or the human leader, is there to fulfill God's laws and to help people fulfill God's laws and to help have an orderly and civilized society. But under Jewish law, even the king is not above the law. Even the king has to abide by the law. The king does not invent laws for no reason arbitrarily. And the king is not above the law. This was a complete radical departure from everything ancient people believed in. Ancient Egyptians worshipped all their pharaohs. Ancient Romans worshipped their emperors. This was true in country after country. And the Jews were the first nation that said, no, even kings are just flesh and blood, they're just human beings, and they too must abide by God's laws. They too are required to be moral and just and righteous and live according to the laws of God. By the way, I'm looking at the time because I just want you to know I've had tremendous technical problems tonight. I don't know why. I'm having a very hard time, and I don't know exactly what's going on and why I'm having these technical difficulties. You may not notice it, and I'm going to try to make this as seamless as possible so that you won't notice the problems with the video that I'm creating, but I'm having technical problems for some reason. I'm all alone here, and I've got to figure this all out by myself, and I'm not the greatest technical person. I'm not someone who has great technical skills with this, and I'm trying to figure it out myself and trying to do this program, even though I'm having a great deal of difficulty here. I mean, so if you see me, a 62-year-old guy, I'm almost 62 years old. You know, in a couple of months, in a few months, I'll be 62 years old, God willing. A guy who's almost 62 years old, if you see him sort of struggling along, it's because my computer and my recording equipment is giving me a hard time tonight. This is a difficult time that I'm having tonight. But I hope we can still get the message out because this is an important program. Under Jewish halakha, just to give you an illustration of how we're supposed to be humane toward animals in terms of the mitzvah of tsa'ar ba'alei chayim. Just to give you an illustration, did you know that if you have an animal, you got to feed that animal before you feed yourself? Let's say you have a dog, a pet dog. You have to feed the dog before you feed yourself if you have a pet cow, if you have a pet cat. You can see, by the way, that I'm having a rough time here because of this. You have no idea what I'm seeing on my screen right now, so I hope you'll bear with me. But if you have a pet dog or a pet cat, you got to feed the dog or the cat before you feed yourself. If you have a farm and you have cows or chickens or other animals on the farm, you got to feed the animals before you feed yourself. Because if you feed yourself and you're full and you're satisfied, you may forget to feed the animals and the animals will suffer. The animals will starve and the animals will suffer, and you're not allowed under any circumstances to cause the unnecessary suffering of these animals. That's just part of Jewish law. It's part of the structure of halacha. Ha-halacha is the Jewish law. We have Torah she-bichtav, which is the written Torah. Torah she-be'al-peh, which is the oral Torah. And we have a structure here which makes it very clear that all of God's creatures are important to God, and we're not allowed to be cruel to God's creatures. We are trying to wake the Jews of Israel up, and believe me, a lot of Jews in Israel are open to our message. We have an advertising campaign now to reach the 6 million Jews of Israel. We're reaching thousands of them every week with our advertising message. We want to reach even more. The more you help us, the more people we can reach in Israel, and the more we can wake the people of Israel up before it's too late. If we work together as a team, we can change history. We can make a difference. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.